So Donald Trump might have become the most honest American president ever.
We can't take care of daycare. We're a big country. We have 50 states. We have all these other people. We're fighting wars. We can't take care of daycare. It's not possible for us to take care of daycare. Medicaid, Medicare, all these individual things, they can do it on a state basis. You can't do it on a federal. We have to take care of one thing, military protection. We have to guard the country.
And honestly, this feels kind of refreshing because at least he just said the thing. And as Trump and his administration remind us that we can't have health care or child care because we need to fund a senseless and bloodthirsty war, there is an unsurprising lack of response from the opposition party. Oh wait, actually I'm wrong. The Democrats, they posted about it, and then Chuck Schumer wrote a strongly worded statement. So I think we're good now. And it honestly is starting to feel like American liberals, and liberals more generally, have more in common with fascists than they do with leftists. You know, they were cool with Liz Cheney being part of their big tent coalition during Harris's doomed 2024 campaign. And now many of those same Democrats are out to get Hassan Piker, claiming that he's just as bad, if not worse, than figures on the far right. And this idea that when push comes to shove, liberals will side with fascism to protect capitalism is explored and explained in Dr. Clara Mattei's recent book, Escape from Capitalism.
This work was really about showing how austerity is not a natural order of things. It comes about in specific moments when the system shows its fragility. And that's what I based kind of the theorization of of Escape from Capitalism on, is to say, well, the capital order is again really stressing the fact that this order is political and is enforced actively by governments and other state institutions or economic institutions at large.
Now, this book, which has the subtitle An Intervention, argues that capitalism is in no way a natural or scientific system. It's a specific political project masked as an economic system that weaponizes concepts like austerity, unemployment, and development to enrich the capitalist class while further dehumanizing and exploiting working people like us. Now, this obviously sucks and is true, but Mattei makes the point that precisely because this isn't a natural or necessary system, it can be escaped, deconstructed, and eventually destroyed. Now, to use my own language here, she's basically showing how the capitalist economic project has turned into a sort of political theology, where we treat the free market system like some holy and preordained way of life given to us by God. And as I've shown in recent videos, a lot of evangelical figures are quite literally willing to argue that capitalism is Jesus's preferred economic paradigm. You know, like, take this credit card and build up debt, because when you do, you will consume of my flesh and blood, or something like that. But of course, this quasi-religious way of life does not serve people, it serves profit. And the implications of all of this are quite bad, as Mattei points out in her book. So something I noticed when prepping for this video is that Clara had done a lot of interviews on British and European TV stations more generally, while in America, her work has been covered more by podcasters and people like me. And I'm kind of clued in on the UK news coverage because I used to live over there. I went to grad school in the UK. And it's gotten harder since I've lived in the States to watch some of the stuff I like, whether that's news shows, documentary series, or again, just binging docs by people like Louis Theroux and Adam Curtis. But thanks to this video sponsor, Surfshark VPN, I can check out all of the stuff, whether it's on BBC iPlayer or the Channel 4 player. I can also watch a host of other content made outside the US. And that's because Surfshark gives me an online disguise, which lets the internet think that I'm just a nice British chap wanting to watch my quiz shows before a cup of tea. You know, Surfshark opens up a whole new world of shows, films, and documentaries, letting you virtually travel around the world. But more important than just the fun stuff, it also keeps you safe when you're exploring the internet with increased security and privacy. And this is especially important if you're using shared Wi-Fi networks where hackers can drop in and just grab all your data. You know, Surfshark makes sure that your online activity is encrypted no matter where you are. They have over 320 servers in 100 countries, so when I'm using it, I feel like I just have a global passport by which I can safely explore the internet. And you know, because the internet is a, I don't know, I guess to use academic speak, sketchy as hell. I'm also loving Surfshark Antivirus, which works 24/7 to make sure that weirdos cannot access my webcam to watch me without my hat on. Because if they did, they would just see hair. They'd see lots of hair. So if you want to watch some British quiz shows while you're having a cup of tea and eating a packet of crisp at night, no matter where you are in the world, check out Surfshark VPN. Now, if you go to surfshark.com/burns or use my code burns, you're going to get 4 extra months for free. And there's no risk in trying Surfshark out as they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. Okay, let's get back to learning about how we can maybe possibly escape from capitalism.
Let's talk about tonight, this deadline that President Trump has set, 8 p.m., has threatened to destroy a civilization. How does an investor process that? Is it a bigger upside risk or downside risk?
Now, something she emphasizes that I think is really important is the idea that capitalism is a fundamentally inhumane system. Like, it's quite literally anti-human. Now, if we want to use the pro-life, anti-life paradigm favored by many of capitalism's biggest fans, it is an anti-life system. And that's both in terms of human life, plant and animal life, and even the very conditions that sustain biological life in general on this planet.
If we're going to protect natural systems, one of the solutions is to bring nature onto the balance sheet.
So on this month's Burns After Reading, let's talk about why I think this book not only speaks to one of the very apparent contradictions of our time, but also might help us articulate some of these things in a way that makes anti-capitalism more palatable to our liberal friends who are starting to understand that things are really, really bad, but might still struggle to understand precisely why. Okay, let's start here. Economics is political.
In 1 year, our agenda has produced a transformation like America has not seen in over 100 years.
It's not a science or some objective metric of understanding financial and social reality. But for generations, we've been taught the lie that somehow economics can be disconnected from the political and more specifically the human. And this decoupling has led to a large scale depolitization where politics happens via voting and posting and donating money and all the economic stuff that actually runs our lives. That's largely apolitical. You know, the system is just running itself. Jacking off with invisible hands. Now, in the book, Matei writes that, like the economist of a century ago, modern economists use language that hides an existential concern for a system that is actually neither eternal nor natural. You know, we might think here of the 2024 election where the Democrats repeatedly told us that actually the economy was good, even though for most of us, our lived experience didn't agree with that. And now in 2026, we're seeing the same thing as markets fall and prices go up, and Trump tells us that it's all good and eggs are cheap and gas prices are going down.
$1.99 a gallon. How would you like to have $1.99? You know, that's...
You are a worthless pile of shit.
Now, as Matei writes in this book, there are no economic problems that are not inevitably also political problems. You know, this makes sense of why those in political power will do stuff that makes no sense to us and seemingly makes our lives actively bad. Matei also writes that what is irrational according to the logic of needs is entirely rational according to the logic of profits. In other words, the market doesn't really give a shit if we can afford gas, eggs, or rent. It's solely oriented towards the purpose of shoring up profit for those in control of capital. Your ability to enjoy your life is completely incidental to those ends. And as Matei gets at in this book, it's not just incidental that this system makes most of our lives way worse than they could be. She writes that to satisfy our needs, we depend on a system whose logic is not only indifferent to them, but also requires our exploitation. And we can put that in simple terms. We are dependent for our means of existence on a system that is fueled by the active exploitation of our human existence as such. You know, there's no such thing as capitalism for everyone or wealth creation for the whole middle class, as that's counter to the operations and the underlying logic of the system itself. Insert your preferred metaphor for this in the comments. And that's why Matei writes that capitalist wealth is grounded in inequality and human alienation. So again, this shit is not accidental. It's very much a part of the system itself. But this is why Clara points out how the use of austerity and unemployment by the ruling classes are, to put it in academic terms, fucking bullshit. Because as we saw earlier in the example of Trump, there is always money in the proverbial banana stand. It's just that we don't get it because that money needs to pay for things like war and corporate tax cuts.
Capitalism and war go hand in hand.
So when governments preach austerity, we need to ask who is being told to spend less and who is still free to use seemingly infinite money on bombs, tanks, private jets, and making sure the billionaires don't have to pay taxes. It's the same with unemployment. Matei gets into this in the book, but think about it in this way. Who benefits from full employment and who benefits from continuous unemployment? Get there? You think about it? You put your answers below? Okay. Because as you probably know, if we all had jobs, there would be less scarcity in terms of work and wages, and then employers would need to compete to attract and retain employees, us. And those employees would then have bargaining power to use against potential forms of exploitation. On the other hand, when there aren't enough jobs for everyone, employers have the power to take advantage of that scarcity to pay less and treat workers worse because they don't have other options. This, of course, also hurts attempts at unionization and workers' organizations because it's way more risky to organize when you can be easily fired. And then if you get fired, you know that there's not other jobs to go get. Now, one temptation that we might reasonably have when we first come face to face with the reality of capitalism is to critique it in terms of its immorality. And I get it, right? Like, it is immoral. It does feel bad. And an appeal to human morality might seem like the only way to combat the system. And it's a, you know, attractive way to communicate why capitalism is bad to people, because especially in the West, we love morality. It's our favorite. We love morality. Oh, delivery robot just drove by the window I'm sitting next to. Speaking of unemployment, so there's an example, right? A robot delivery thing just went by on the sidewalk. That is something that the capitalist system is producing. Who used to deliver the food? A working person, but the working person is incidental to the flow of capital, right? 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 So they're gonna build little robots that take jobs, and then we're like, but who's gonna do the thing? Or don't worry about it. Just consume. Just consume. Just shut the fuck up and consume. Now we see things like this call for morality in calls to tax billionaires and punish the bad dudes who are in charge of the system and then their bad dude friends who continue to benefit from it. But as Matei points out in this book, morality isn't a relevant category here, as capitalism is not inherently moral or immoral. It just follows an underlying economic logic, a logic that doesn't really care about us, doesn't really think in terms of human moral goods.
They have to increase the rate of exploitation. It has nothing to do with the greed, right? Again, like this forms of, oh, it's the exceptional greed of corporations. Yeah. No, it's not about greed. It's about the structure that we've created. And this is very important for me because I'm not a determinist. And I think a lot of, unfortunately, of vulgar Marxism is. We are the architects of this structure that then traps us. And this trap is real also for large corporations.
And this is why we can't simply change our tax system to turn capitalism into something more humane and good. Writing about this, Matei says that the irrelevance of greed reveals the force of market dependence. The system has commandeered our behavior. Morality, good or bad, has lost its agency. You know, because morality isn't going to change a system where 44% of American full-time workers don't make enough for their basic needs, or where half of the American homeless population is unemployed. But the thing that struck me most in this book, and the part that I think is most urgent for our contemporary moment, is the historic connection between liberalism and fascism. Or put more specifically, the tendency of liberals to align with fascists when capitalism is under threat. In the book, she writes about how Jack Morgan Jr., one of the guys who started JP Morgan, now JP Morgan Chase, was vocally supportive of Mussolini's fascist economic policies. She brought this up when we spoke.
Many well-meaning liberals need to get shocked with historical analysis that reveal what they're trying to just avoid seeing. And I think it all started kind of from there by looking at a specific historical moment when Benito Mussolini, the founding father of fascism, rose to power in Italy in October of 1922. He rose to power not out of his own might, but out of the actual political support of this large alliance with liberals, both domestically with a lot of economists supporting him, and internationally with, you know, not just the Bank of Morgan, which is now Morgan Chase Bank, but also the Bank of England, all of the international financial elite. Why were they supporting Mussolini? And, you know, this is important because we usually understand fascism as an aberration and an exception. And of course, also something that is very distant from capitalism and from the market economy.
And while maybe not as high stakes as JP Morgan and Benito Mussolini teaming up, we see a version of this logic in the current very dumb beef between the Democratic establishment and Hassan Piker. While Piker is regularly raising money for and supporting progressive candidates within the Democratic Party, it's not good enough because he's still actively critical of both the capitalist project more generally and the specific outcomes of the capitalist project, like the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And in this book, Matei does a really brilliant job of showing how the political and humanitarian tragedy in Gaza and the West Bank is a direct product of the logic of capital.
So, yeah. But that development that still benefited such few individuals in the global north is based on the immiseration of the global south. And what I do is use Palestine and Israel, and again, Palestine in quotes, the occupied Palestinian territories, yeah, as a proxy of how, in fact, these relations of dependence are politically constructed.
This is all because, as Matei writes, liberals and fascists shared the common goal of protecting the capital order and aligned on the method to do so, aggressive austerity policies. And this is also why we need to be skeptical of the sort of logic that implies that not voting on the Democratic Party line is somehow tacitly supporting authoritarianism or fascism. As one of Matei's other fundamental claims is that capitalism and democracy are fundamentally incompatible. So the type of democracy that exists within capitalism is always neutered by the way in which capitalism is assumed as a sort of natural and apolitical economic system that exists separately from our political system. Which is why Matei writes that the achievement of universal suffrage gives us the impression of having the collective power to decide the future of our country. Now, to be clear, this doesn't mean that voting is dumb. It just means we need to be realistic with ourselves about what we're doing when we're voting and what the limits of democratic participation are under the current system. Now, because democracy, according to Matei, is fundamentally anti-capitalist, moving beyond capitalism is a fundamental prerequisite for a truly democratic society. And because capitalism has, in her words, no vision for humanity, we need to move on from this system at the basic level of creating a political and economic world that genuinely benefits human beings like us, you know, benefits humans, most humans, all humans, and not algorithms and robots. And it really is as simple as all of that. Capitalism is an anti-democratic and dehumanizing project. And if we want democracy and our own humanity, we got to do something different.
My students work on Ghana, work on other places in the world. It's all the same script. Yeah. It's just different levels of the same shit that occurs over and over and over again. And it's what is allowing big, large shareholders to live in multi-million dollars apartments in Manhattan. Manhattan and New York, the city with more wealth in the world concentrated, and where one out of eight children in New York have experienced homelessness in 2025, okay? And actually in certain quarters, even higher. This is what the system is about.
So what do we do? You know, how do we escape? Does Clara give us the playbook? Okay, so this book is not a step-by-step guide for how to do a revolution. What it does do is clearly articulate the problem and the stakes of our contemporary moment in language that's both clarifying for the seasoned anti-capitalists and provides a really nice inroad for those who are just kind of anti-capitalism curious. You know, Matei calls us to remember that we cannot see reforms like universal healthcare as the end goal, which is an important reminder because we don't just want a Bernie Sanders style politician to come along and make capitalism a little less worse. We want that Bernie style politician to make our lives better in the short term so that we can then have the time, the resources, the space for our humanity, which is necessary for us to organize together and dismantle the capitalist order once and for all. In the book and in our conversation, Matei talks about her own activism, which happens via her organization, the Forum for Real Economic Emancipation, or FREE.
And the Forum for Real Economic Emancipation for me is really a huge space for hope, because I feel less alone. You know, I was very depressed as a mother with what was happening in Gaza, and what allowed me to live was to participate in assembly, to see that we are making a local impact that is changing the life of so many people just by being together in a collective. Yeah. That we can make decisions together.
Now, I'm gonna post the link to FREE in the description. They have a YouTube channel as well, and I know that Clara wants to hear from those who are interested in potentially starting a chapter in their own city. If you wanna watch my full interview with Dr. Clara Matei, the author of Escape from Capitalism, it's available for free. There's a link below. It's on my Patreon, but everyone can watch it. So go check that out. I think we had a really great conversation. And if you want more of this stuff, if you want to talk about books and attend seminars with some of the most interesting political theorists and philosophers working today, consider signing up for Burns Theory on my Patreon. We have visiting guest lectures, office hours, lectures and talks from me, and the all-important Discord community that I finally started. Yep, tell everyone I finally have a Discord. Capitalism won. And if you want to read this book, I think you should. Remember that the library rules. Now, if you want to own your own copy so you can take notes in it like how I do, use the bookshop.org link below, which supports independent bookstores and this channel and does not support Jeffrey Bezos. Okay, in the meantime, I'm going to go try to escape capitalism. So I'll see you later. I'll let you know if I find a way out. Also, shout out to this office. This is the last video I'll be filming in this office space. Shout out to it existing. Shout out to this being the first place besides my home I was ever able to record videos for this channel. We had a good run, but now it's over. Bye.